White Rocket Entertainment.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello, and welcome to the AU Wishbone and to AU Wishbone TV, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we are back after about a, what, three-week layoff. It's kind of the dead part of the season. Even the team got to go off and do spring break, right? So the only football to report on would be beach football. So like the guy that threw the ball and hit the police car a mile away, we need to sign him up. But I think every team in the country is saying that after he gets out of jail. So what's new with you?
Not a whole lot. Just relaxing, enjoying the off season, and watching some college basketball, that kind of thing. Do you enjoy watching this tournament?
I watched a little bit of it. It's been my least interesting tournament ever because Auburn wasn't in it, of course, like the 13th year. Georgetown didn't even make it this year. I had no rooting interest whatsoever. I had Michigan State in the championship game, so that didn't work out too well. So my bracket is all blown up. My brackets look like the Titanic. The entire bottom half is blown away, right? It's just the top half of the brackets are in tatters and the bottom half is just taking on water and sinking rapidly. But you know what I did watch this week? Did you see me talking about it a little bit, what I actually watched on Sunday morning for the first time ever in my life?
You said you watched a car race.
I watched the first Formula One race 2016. The new season started started at midnight because the Australian Grand Prix. It was the Grand Prix. And so it started on midnight, which I guess was like 2012 Australia time. I don't know. And so I watched it, and you know, it was kind of fun. I really liked it a lot. I'm looking forward to the next one. They do them. This is what's cool, John. They start in March, and they do them every 2 weeks through the end of November.
Huh.
So if you like it, you got plenty, you know, of entertainment to look forward to. Or the little ying-ying cars going ying-ying-ying-ying around. So, should be fun. So,
doesn't do anything for me.
Well, you know, when I was a little kid, I watched IndyCars, and I thought that was pretty cool. But then the whole IndyCar thing blew up. You know, they had the whole, like a civil war going on in IndyCar, and I lost interest there. And then NASCAR has never interested me in the slightest. I want my race cars to look like little spaceships. I don't want them to look like something that I could go buy. That's boring. That's not done anything to me. So this is kind of a nice compromise. It kind of looked like Indy cars, but the race is only about 2 hours long, which I don't have to spend half the day with it, you know? So that's pretty cool. Yeah. So anyway, we'll see how it goes. What's the latest on the football team? I know they're back to practice today or what? This is being Monday.
We're recording Monday night. I think the first practice is Tuesday, and there's a scrimmage coming up Saturday. So, it's kind of a weird spring schedule because they practice for a while, and then they went on spring break, and now they're back, and they practice again, starting tomorrow. And then now we're going to head into the more – intense physical practices. I think before there was a lot of focus on teaching, integrating new guys and younger guys and kind of getting back to fundamentals and stuff. And now they're going to go for more pads and hitting, I think, and do some scrimmages. And maybe even the big question is, will the quarterbacks go live in the scrimmages? And that way we might figure out, down the road who has the edge and who the starting quarterback might be.
Well, I did see that it took exactly a week of practice before JF3 and Javon Robinson both were moved up to at least co-first team.
Well, it's
What was that?
That was the printer in my
room. Oh.
Fired up.
Thought a spacecraft was landing about to abduct you there.
It's new, and I hadn't heard it start up from sleep before like that. So
all right.
That was kind of exciting. Anyhow, yeah, I mean, I think no one is shocked by that. I mean, Auburn is, you know, a little bit like the Kremlin when it comes to letting out information about the spring practice. You know, it's like, you know, they barbed wire in and nobody gets out. You know, nobody gets in, no information gets out.
All right.
They just had the little public spokesman go out there and say, all is well, you know, and we're developing the most potent offense in world history.
We have two channels at Auburn. Channel one is propaganda. Channel two is Aubie saying, I'm pointing, go back to channel one. Well, Gus is the gremlin from the Kremlin. I like that. He's not the cardinal of the Kremlin. He's the gremlin from the Kremlin, which means I have to play. You get the idea. I hit the off button instead of the volume button. Oh, well. All right, let me get rid of that there. Okay, so, yeah, so spring practice will be back underway tomorrow. We didn't learn a whole lot from that opening week, and we already talked about it a little bit. But is there anything else from spring practice worth talking about?
I mean, here's the stories coming out of spring practice. Players are having more fun. You know, that there's this whole new, I mean, first there's the attitude of like, everybody's going to have to earn it. That's the one thing we kind of joked about a little bit, but yes. That the difference between last year's team and this year's team is the idea perhaps that some people last year didn't earn it. And that created some of the bad attitude. So the idea that everybody has to earn it, and then players say they're having more fun, and some of that is attributed to the change on defense, going from Muschamp to Steele, going from a guy who's a yeller and a screamer to a guy who's a little calmer in executing the things. And I think some of it had, you know, I think the players went, you know, didn't enjoy last year either. And they're glad to be out in the practice field and going through spring practice with a chance to, you know, get better and kind of, I think, you know, get back on the field in a positive way, if that makes any sense.
Sure. Yeah. I think that, you know, I said earlier on, earlier in the week, last week, that the fact that they made the slogan this year, earn it, speaks volumes about last year's players, or at least some of the players that we had last year. You know, there was maybe a sense of entitlement in some areas that is not conducive to team performance and teamwork, you know, and maybe when you remove a little bit of the entitlement and you have a little bit more of this sense of having to earn it, you know, then certainly maybe that will result in better performance. Yeah, so I guess we're just going to wait and see what happens over the next couple of weeks coming up toward A-Day. In other news, how have the women been doing in the NCAA? I haven't seen any of their play.
They lost yesterday to Baylor, got annihilated.
Well, Baylor was really, really good, right? I mean, it was just sort of happenstance having to play Baylor.
No, I mean, Auburn was an 8 seed, and so they had to play the 1 seed in the second round, and, it didn't go well. I mean, but it was ugly. But it just shows, like, Auburn's a good team. Auburn's women's team is a good team. They're an NCAA tournament-level team. But there's a big gap between, you know, them and the very top-shelf teams right now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think they're hopefully on the way back up. I mean, they used to be so great under Champy. You know, we've been joking about this a little bit that we got to do our basketball show, and I guess if we're going to do it, maybe after A Day. I mean, it's been a good time with the tournament going on, but I guess spring practice will get going now. I tweeted out a whole bunch of stuff about the basketball team the other day, so if those of you on Twitter, you want to, I don't know if you could find it now, but. This is cool. My phone just lit up and says, now streaming. I don't know if you can see that, but it says, AU Wishbone now streaming on YouTube, live streaming. So people that subscribe to our show, they get a little text message from YouTube on your phone that lets you know to check out the show.
To our show, they get a little text message on your phone that lets you know.
And then on the phone, he's going to be holding up the phone.
It's like Wheels Within Wheels. All right. Well, so how do you feel about things right now with spring practice going on? Before we totally get into our nitty-gritty of other things, I mean, what's your overall take on how things are going? Are you buying into the hype? Are you buying what they're selling, or are you still skeptical?
Well, I mean, the number one thing in any spring practice is, has anybody suffered a season-ending injury? And to that, the answer is no. So that's good. Okay, that's number one. As long as that doesn't happen between now and the end, that is success. Okay, so that's number one. Number two is, you know, the players seem to have a new attitude, a new energy, and there's a, you know, Malzahn always talks about going fast and that kind of stuff. And so I'm a little bit kind of tuning that out. That he's going to go back to going fast, because I've heard that, you know, for 2 years now.
We're going to be there may be teams that are faster than us, but there will be at least one team that is slower than us. I guarantee that. we're planning on making sure that Southern Mississippi plays slightly slower than us. So there will be one team. We'll be blessed. When people look at our team playing, they're going to say they got the it factor. They got the wow factor.
That's pretty good.
I have seen teams play slightly slower than them. Yeah, we keep waiting. We keep waiting for that moment that we get back to this, you know, Auburn fast. And did we abandon Auburn fast because we needed the defense to have help? Is that what it is?
To me, we talked about how this is kind of a make or break year for Gus and how he has to win games and stuff. And my thing is, if I'm Gus, and that I really truly believe if I'm Gus and Gus believes that offense is better and more effective going fast, then they should go fast. Like, he should do what he – I mean, it's one of those things, like, if you're going to go down firing the guns that you believe in and not, like, be talked into something else by some committee or, you know, to help out the other side of the ball or whatever. If you want to be the best offense in the country and score whatever 40 points a game and you could do that by going fast, then do it. And I think it's one of the things of, like, they need first downs to go fast. And the quarterback play was so bad last year, we didn't get a lot of first downs. And especially, you know, many fewer first downs rushing the ball. So I think, you know, when you're not executing the offense well and they don't have confidence in you to run the right play to begin with or make the right decision, they don't want you to go too fast. And then also we just weren't making enough first downs to have the opportunity to try to do it. So I think if the idea will be to play Jonathan Franklin III, to run the ball much better and then get first downs and go faster, to put pressure on other teams' defense. So.
Yeah, because when the offense isn't clicking like that, everything else suffers. It's just like it's the key. It's the glue, you know, that holds it all together. And when it's not sticking, nothing hangs together. And it's interesting because Gus didn't want any other head coach telling him to slow down, which basically means the only thing that can slow me down is me. So he slows himself down, and we'll see. Okay, you had an interesting question here, which I will pass back to you. You said, how worried are you about each position on a scale of 1 to 10?
No, well, so we're gonna play a game here, okay? I'm going to name a position, and you're going to give me a number, about how worried you are about it heading into the, you know, at this point in the off season, and with one being you're not worried at all, do you think they're going to be great, and 10 being, you know, complete panic and we're in deep doo-doo heading into SEC play, okay? All right.
All right. I forgot to hold up this sign. You can. This is where you can find us. All right, let's play. Rock and roll. What you got?
All right. We're going to start on defense because I care about defense. All right. 1 to 10, okay?
Uh-huh.
Defensive line.
Tell me again numbers, what the numbers represent.
One is you're not worried at all. You have absolute faith that they're going to be excellent. And 10 is complete panic. So how worried are you defensive line scale 1 to 10?
Defensive line, honestly, between the new players coming in and what we've got back, I'm like a 3 on that.
Mm-hmm. All right, linebacker.
Oh, it's the worst one. This is a big one. Hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you, honey.
I think Fred summed it up for me there. That would be the one I'm about like a 9 on. <man. laughs>
So Van says linebackers, he's a 9. Defensive backs.
Four.
Okay. A little, I mean, missing Jonathan Jones. All right. How about kickers and punters? I'll lop them in one group there.
Oh, only about a 2. I feel pretty good about our special teams, don't you?
Yeah. All right. Offensive line. Losing both tackles.
Yeah. You know, honestly, every year the offensive line is at least a 5 just because you don't know how they're going to proverbially gel, right? That's the buzzword. Offensive lines gel or don't gel. So we don't ever know the gelatin consistency of our offensive line from year to year. So I'm always somewhat concerned about it, you know, and it's often sometimes something of a surprise as to how well it does, you know, if it's, you know, you could have players you're not thinking a lot of individually, but they gel, you know, and you got a great unit. And other times you can have individually good players that never quite seem to mesh. So it's really kind of, I would almost argue the offensive line is the single hardest position as a group to predict going in, just because even when you have great players, they may not work well together as a group.
Well, but I think one of the things we've learned, and we learned to our peril last year, is that what you want is not just good players returning, but good players returning with experience in the same position. So the guy next to them, the guys on each side of them are the same or whatever. And so we had good guys returning last year, but they were all kind of shuffled around. So I think, you know, the 3 middle guys are back. They're going to be in the same position. The 2 tackles will be new, but they have some talent. So I think it has the potential to be solid, but I think 5 is pretty reasonable there, you know, at least. All right. Wide receivers.
I don't have a sound effect for this. Well, they're all going to be so young. I mean, well, they're not all going to be so young, but the unit in terms of starters and everything will be so young that let's put it this way. I have confidence that they can be good, but that doesn't necessarily mean I think they will. I mean, they have the as Pat Dye would say, they have a chance to be a pretty good football team. So, wide receivers, I'm going to say 7 with room to move up.
I think I spend a lot of time reading about baseball. I'm, I play.
Better you than me.
I play in a long time fantasy baseball keeper league. It's National League only. We draft National League players and play. It's a keeper league. You draft players every year and years, draft prospects and stuff. And so I think when I think about the wide receiver group, I think about like baseball prospects, about how they have potential and there's a lot of growth and a lot of upside in there, but there's also a lot of, and you know, there's raw talent, but there's also like, you know, as they're freshmen, there's some kind of boom or bust there too. We have some older guys who like don't have the upside, but they're just kind of like, you know, replacement level players. Like they just go out there and play. They're solid, but they're not special. They're not difference makers. And so the young guys have the potential to be difference makers, but some of them, it may happen this year. Some of them, it may happen down the road. But you're right in the sense that there's a lot of potential there. And so that part's always exciting when you have a group like that, where you could say like, so who's going to step up and which of these guys this year is going to step forward and you know, really show us something. So, all right. Running back.
Well, the thing with the running backs, of course, is that I feel pretty good with what we have, especially when Kerryon comes back from his
Kerryon, my wayward son.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah, okay. I thought you were reaching for the sign.
Nope, I'm letting you go. I've showed it once tonight. We're good.
Okay, for those on audio that don't know, John occasionally holds up a sign that says Van playing with audio board again or messing with audio board. It's interesting. It's like we have one of everything at running back, but we don't have depth at any one thing. We have like the tough all-around power back in Javon Robinson. We have the sort of elusive spin move, catch the ball in the flat and go for 20 yards guy in Rock Thomas. We've got the sort of utility wildcat quarterback, you know, get you a big play around the corner guy in Kerryon Johnson. We've got the big fullbacks, but we don't really have two of anything. Because even the fullbacks are different, right? We've got like a big power fullback, and then we've got kind of a whatever. I mean, Chandler Cox is not a finesse by any means. It's funny. I was just rewatching the Memphis game, the bowl last week. I was trying to clean some space off my DVR, and so I just went ahead and watched it one more time and deleted it. And I figure it's on YouTube or something. But I watched it again, and Chandler Cox got a block on one of those, maybe a touchdown, maybe a big first down or something. This was a freshman, and he went out there and just he put a guy in a backflip, head over heels. He's seen, you know, like Cox and the guy. So that was impressive for a true freshman being out there. But we've got, like I said, we've got kind of one of everything, and I just worry. With our history, the last, you know, it's funny, right? I mean, 2013, we didn't really have that many injuries, and we did have a lot of luck, they say. And then, of course, the karma flips back around. And last year, we had all kind of injuries and all kind of bad luck. So you just don't know what 2016 is going to be. Is it going to be a 2013 in terms of luck and injury, or is it going to be last year again? And we, you know, we just don't have any way of knowing. So that's what I'm concerned about. So I guess if I had to rate our running backs in terms of how I was concerned about them, one is ultimate confidence, right?
Yes.
You know, in terms of the front line, I'm like a 3 on them. But in terms of the overall unit, I'm about a 6 or 7.
Because you're worried about depth.
Yeah, Javon Robinson gets injured. What are we going to do? It's running back by committee, and there's nobody that can get you that Cam Newton. You know, Trey Mason first down.
Especially if your quarterback weighs 175 pounds or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Hey, and by the way, that is something I wanted to bring up. One of our many Twitter friends, interesting point to me in a conversation last week that I wanted to run by you. He said, and I don't remember who it was offhand, but he said he had seen Jason Smith play in high school. And he's seen JF3, and he says that Jason Smith is bigger and a better quarterback than JF3. Now, when I heard people last year saying, oh, we should put Jason Smith at quarterback, my thought was, if the coaches never had really any intention of playing in there, then there's got to be reasons. You know, in other words, it must be he can't pass very well, or he's not that fast, or he's not as fast as he would need to be at that, or something. But this guy was saying no, that given the choice between Jason Smith and JF3, he'd take Jason Smith at quarterback every day of the week. What do you think about that?
I mean, Jason Smith, you know, was MVP of the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star game as a high school senior. He has a lot of talent. And he was supposedly a very good high school quarterback. And he – so I don't know what it is. I don't know why they're not enamored of with him as the quarterback in the offense. But they never considered it. And it was – you know, when we were struggling last year, it really surprised me. You know, we just didn't run Wildcat with him. I didn't understand that at all. But it's not – it's, you know, for them, it's not on the radar. It's got to be something else about him or the position that they're not – you know, not willing to play in there. So
here's what I'm most afraid of, and you'll know exactly where I'm coming from with this. Okay. You will know exactly where I'm coming from with this. Here's what I'm most afraid of with JF3. Okay. I'm afraid that they're going to have him as the run option quarterback, and they're going to put him in obvious wildcat run situations and have him run around the end, do the little fake, you know, the little, you know, and then
a little zone read.
A little zone read, but it's really not a zone read because he's not reading anything. He's just, it's a fake handoff. And it's a called naked bootleg, basically.
Yes.
Or at least a bootleg.
You're seeing the, what kind of Cody Burns, Chris Todd scenario?
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing that's driven us crazy about Gus and Rhett's play call in the last couple of years, is that they never disguise anything like that, right? They're so good at disguising and sleight of hand in every other situation. But when they do the thing with a quarterback and the Wildcat, there's no disguising at all, right? It's just you put the Wildcat quarterback out there and he goes, and 11 people are waiting for him. It drives me crazy. I just, to me, for JF3 to be a legitimate threat, they've got to do him like they did Nick Marshall in 2013 in the very first game. Do you remember the Washington State game, Nick Marshall's first game? He came out there and was throwing the ball way more than he was running it.
Yes, I was there.
He threw the ball quite a bit. I'm just afraid they're going to go out there and say, well, you know, Franklin can run the ball, so we'll just put him out there and run it. And he's going to get killed. He's not going to make it through the first game. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Yes. Well, and I worry about them getting cute with the substitution thing. Hey, Gus also sometimes has the mentality, it seems like, of a high school coach that he wants everyone to play. And if he can share the quarterback position between two people, he wants to do it or whatever. And run guys in to get them snaps. And that's fine if you want to have, you know, somebody play a series or something, because you're break. You know, if we want to not redshirt Woody Barrett and we want to play him, you know, two series a game or something to get him some snaps, that's fine. But if, you know, if Franklin III is going to be the quarterback, we should just let him be the quarterback. And again, it's like last year. I would have rather us put in, you know, Jason Smith and just run the ball and not bone it at all. because again, this is, you know, Gus went and visited Baylor over this, you know, over the winter. Go look at what Baylor did last year. They were in their fourth string quarterback, who was a converted wide receiver. Guess what they did? You know, they ran the freaking ball every time and basically ran the Wildcat, and they got like 600 yards a game. So, you know, they didn't try to keep running their offense with the quarterback that couldn't do it. So I think that's, you know, maybe hopefully we can learn from that. But all right, your last position, quarterback, scale 1 to 10.
Well, yeah, that's what we're talking about now. So clearly, one is absolute zen-like peace with the universe.
No, one is like, one would be like, you know, Nick Marshall returns in 2014 or whatever, after coming off 2013.
and a 10 would be
one is like, yeah, one is a great returning starter. So
a 10 is good Lord. We need somebody, Woody to graduate early or something, or I don't know. Well, he'll already be by then, but, I just because of past history and everything, I feel like if they get it going, it'll really go, but I'm worried they won't get it going. So I'm going to say for quarterbacks, my concern level right now is about an 8. And I think that's conservative.
Ding, 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 ding. I think you're right there with most Auburn fans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, because here's the difference. Like at wide receiver, I think the talent is clearly there, you know, and some of it's raw and some of it's young enough, but the raw materials are there. At quarterback, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. And if the raw materials are there, could this group coach it out of them to make it really effective? I hope so.
Man. Well, it's like every one of them has an upside. And every one of them has a downside. And we just don't know which side the coin will land on. So, we'll see. All right. Well, we got to pause here for a second to point out. Oh, I'm glad to hear this. I did not know this. I'm looking at the show notes by way of John, and I discovered that what's going on at AU Bookstore? John?
On a day at the Auburn University Bookstore, there will be a signing of Lorendo by author Ken Ringer. The game this year is moved back. Normally it's earlier. This year it starts at 3 Central Time, and the book signing is noon to 2 p.m. at the Auburn University Bookstore. So stop by if you haven't got a copy. Pick one up. If you have one, you want him to sign it, he'll sign it, be there to answer questions. I'm not sure if there'll be anybody else with him there, but if there is, I'll tweet it out. But it's exciting, and he's excited about it. They asked him to come. And so if you're interested in Auburn football history, it's a fun book to read, and this will be a chance to talk to the author about it. So.
Meet the man, the myth, the legend, the Ringer Senior, the author of Lorendo. That should be very cool.
Yeah. And I just want to say thank you for everybody for their support for the book. It has done very well, and we're very happy about that. So,
yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We got to do another book soon. My calendar for 2016 is pretty full, but I guess at some point – now, I started to say this one time on a previous show, and I stopped myself. But I guess at some point, and I don't mean immediately, but at some point we need to think about updating Decades of Dominance. Because we wrote it after the 2012 season. And so it's now 13, 14, 15 are in the books, but not in the book. So I guess 2 or 3 more years, maybe 3 or 4 more years, we'll have to at least update the records in it, the statistics and everything. Put out a new edition of it.
I like it.
All right. Well, let me see if it's time then for...
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right.
Do we have the questions from the listeners?
Some. Okay. How about
he knows I'm right. Looking for this game music.
You're looking match game stalling music?
Yeah, I can't find anything on the new board, though. It's congrats. Well, I'll settle for this. And now a musical interlude of the Champions League. People can get to hear what our theme, what our secondary theme music sounds like when there's not, you know, a bunch of Jim Fife and Rod Bramblett over it. All right, you got it?
All right. I would like for you to compare Auburn Gus Malzahn to a character in a famous book. That's the question. A character compare in a book. Malzahn to a character or a story in a book that you like.
Man.
Kind of school teacherish.
Yeah.
Serious.
Well, he's been Harry Potter before. Right. Mm-hmm. That's the old standby. He's Harry Potter. He's got the glasses and he's a wizard and all that. What else? Gosh. Is he the Flash with his speed? And Nick Saban is Professor Zoom? Maybe? I don't know.
All right, you think about that one.
That's a tough one to pull right out of the air. I mean, Harry Potter is so identified with him, you know, that it's tough to come up with another one that matches as well.
All right.
He's not get a ring, not throw one away.
All right. One of the other questions for us is pick a game that we attended, not have to be together, that is particularly memorable in Auburn history.
We've been at many games that were very memorable in Auburn history. I mean, you know, the 90s season always has a special place because it was, it was my senior year, but that doesn't mean it was my last year at Auburn. By a long way. In fact, I was looking at my plaques from Model UN at Auburn the other day in my office. I have them in my office in Redbud. And I was looking at the years on them, on some of them, and I was going, dang, I was there then? I was there then? What was the question again? Oh, memorable games. Yeah, I think about the 1990 season because that was my senior year, and we were at games together, and the Florida State one always stands out, right? Because they had beaten us, what, like three in a row or something? We beat them the first three. They beat us the second three. And that was the last shot, really. We were going to play them. That was the last time we played them, wasn't it? And
yes.
Oh, until the national championship game. It seems almost like a different team in a different world, obviously. But back in the Pat Dye era and everything, that was the last game. And, you know, that's the one where it looked forever like we were going to lose. We came back in the last seconds and kicked that field goal to win, had that huge sack on their quarterback. And I just remember all of us there in the stands together in this giant hug. And it's like 20 of us all hugging and jumping up and down. And we like fell down. That was particularly memorable. But, I mean, we were also at the – you and I were also at the 89 Iron Bowl the first time ever, right?
Sure. Which, I
mean, hard to beat that one.
It is hard to beat that one. That Florida State game was memorable. I also remember because we did the chop back at them at the end. I mean, that was terrible, but it needed to be done. And you have no idea how annoying that is if you've been to a game against in a person. So,
absolutely.
And I was going to say, and I mean, I hate Florida State. We've established this. It's well-traveled ground here, but I attended the Sugar Bowl where Florida State beat Auburn in at the last second, and the chant with their band in a dome is particularly annoying. So,
and I was at the 89 Florida State game in Tallahassee that I don't believe you got to go to, right? And so, it was even worse in their stadium with their crowd, in their crappy bleachers and everything. It was a pretty negative experience. I had bronchitis. I could barely yell insults back at the jerks yelling insults at me, which was making it worse. What is there a game that that you went to without me around that stands out, like that I don't know about, that was a big one? Were you, because you probably were at some of the ones earlier than me, right? I really didn't really start going regularly until 87.
Sure. I mean, I was at some of the late 70s, early 80s games, but you know, a lot of those, I don't remember all of it. I mean, I remember Lionel James and James Brooks and Joe Cribbs and Bo Jackson at Fullwood, but I don't remember a lot of specific individual games. I remember, I mean, I was at this Hog If You Sack Brody game.
Yeah, me too.
That was a good one.
You know, the one that stands out to me that I think about it now, and this was, I think, before you and I met, was the opening game of the 87 season. We were opening up the East Upper Deck. You know, that was the first game where we had both upper decks on the mm-hmm. stadium. And they had a smaller team scheduled. They decided they wanted to open up with the big stadium against a bigger name. And we had lost, of course, to Texas in 83, which had, you know, ruined our season. And then 84, where Bo got hurt. And so they brought in Texas in 87 under David McWilliams, their new coach, after Fred Akers was fired. This was funny. Three friends of mine from high school and I were on our way to Panama City, and we stopped in Auburn to go to that game. And Auburn just destroyed Texas that day, 31-3, I think, or 31-6, something like that. And it was just beautiful. And I really think about that game as like the beginning of that real run there where we were just dominant for 2 or 3 years, you know, in Dye's latter years. That was a really good one. The play that always stands out of that game for me was when Texas finally completed a pass and the receiver caught the ball in the air. And as he's turning around in midair with the ball, Fred Staples, our new safety, who I think was like a junior college transfer or something, he had played before. He was an older guy. He wasn't a freshman, but it was his first game, I believe. Fred Staples in midair smacked into the guy and just took the ball away from him and kept going. The guy just like, didn't even know what happened to him. Staples just, wow, and he's gone. I mean, so that really just kind of signified that whole, you know, game to me. Like, Auburn looked like men against boys against Texas that day, which was so different from what we had, you know, seen the previous couple of times. So that was cool. What else?
That's it for listener questions.
Wow, you guys really let us down tonight, and I berate you, and I shake my finger at you. That's poor. All right, well, tonight, let's see. We did a list of questions around the SEC. Do we have any around the SEC stuff? I mean, there's not a whole lot really going on, is there?
No, I mean, there's stuff happening in other programs. I mean, Georgia came out with this thing this week under Kirby Smart where they said they're going to – if players transfer, they're going to restrict where they can transfer to. They're basically – they're not being nice anymore like they were under Mark Rick or that kind of stuff. They're going to be hardcore about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they got to do something.
I don't think this is something, but I think you're also going to see him, be a lot more lenient than Rick was too. Rick was, you know – would run guys off, and I think Kirby's going to try to keep from running guys off probably. So
you're saying more thugs at Thugga?
Probably.
I think they should probably like give all the Georgia State troopers pictures of Nick Saban crosses the state line, go ahead and arrest him for all sorts of crimes and misdemeanors. That'll help a little bit if Kirby's trying to, you know, keep his players back home. Yeah, it wasn't even worth playing the song for that, so I didn't. This week, John, we have a special feature. As you may have heard, Dos Equis is retiring the most interesting man in the world. And I'm very sad about that because I like the most interesting man in the world. So I did a little digging and I discovered that we actually know the most interesting coach in the world. And so we have a special brief segment tonight where we're going to be joined by Coach Snyder. Well, actually he's not going to be with us tonight. He's busy. He's busy reupholstering the covered wagon. But, I have the results of an interview I did with him before the show tonight. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
This is, one moment. This is the most interesting coach in the world. He once put the NCAA on probation. He punts on second down just to. He believes field goals are a sign of weakness. He once led his side to victory in the Civil War. Not the Oregon-Oregon State game, the actual Civil War. He invented the forward pass because he was bored beating teams with only the run. Referees have issued him sideline warnings for not being on the field enough. The referees let him start overtime on the 15-yard line. The result of his NCAA investigation, they gave him extra scholarships. And finally, the Gipper once won one for him. He's the most interesting coach in the world. Stay thirsty, my friends.
Very nice. Well done. Entertaining. Funny. That's good off-season material right there. I like it.
I was so pleased when I was able to find the music. I can just about find anything when I really put my mind to it. But it had to have the music or it wouldn't have worked, you know?
Oh, yeah, no. Without the music, it's just you talking.
Yeah. So that was the result of about 30 minutes of me brainstorming after dinner a while ago. I know I could have done better, but that was about the best I could come up with in about 30 minutes. So
that's fun.
I'm not a comedy writer. I just try. I just play one on the podcast every week. All right. We had one other thing. One other thing came up this week, and I wanted to run it by you before we kind of move to our final, you know, closing stuff. And that is, the question kept popping up again this week as we get ready for the new season. Why is Auburn so erratic? Now, we've talked about this before. I even did a chart, right, a graph. Remember my graph that looked like it looked like the earthquake game with the seismograph, you know? But, I mean, there's several options here, which I have handily written down. Is it the coaching? I mean, over the years, I mean, it seems unlikely because we've had Pat Dye, we had Terry Bowden, we had Tuberville, Chizik there wasn't bad for a while, and Gus. They were all decent, and some of them were excellent coaches, I think. So I don't know about coaching. Is it talent? I think we recruit pretty well, and certainly the last few years we've been recruiting in the top 10 very consistently. Is it playing in the SEC West? Well, maybe lately, but the West for a long time was the weaker side of the SEC. Younger people may not realize that from 1992, more or less until, I think it was really when Tennessee hit the map there after Fulmer, that was a moment when it sort of shifted, right? Right around the same time, you got Saban in the West and you lost Fulmer in the East and you lost Urban Meyer and Spurrier at Florida, and you got Les Miles, you know, and then of course Auburn had a good year too, and all these things sort of happened in over the space of just a very short time to make the to flip the conference. And then is it just bad luck? I mean, last year certainly we were victims of bad luck, but what do you think is the prime reason why we can't just be good in the years we expect to be good and we can't be consistent?
Good question. I think part of it is that Auburn is always going to play a schedule that's so tough that if Auburn isn't excellent, the results are going to be ugly. I mean, that's part of it is, you know, if we were playing some mid-level, you know, western half of the Big Ten schedule, you'd never know.
Yeah.
We'd be great, or we'd be 8 or 9 wins. You know, it'd be 9 wins, or you know, or be like 11 or 12 wins every single season. But because we're playing in the SEC West and everyone else is so good, you know, in our not, you know, we're playing Georgia from the East, we're playing good non-conference teams. The level of competition is so high that when we're not, you know, playing at the level of a top 10 team, that the results are poor. So I think that's a high threshold for anyone to meet every single year. So I think that's part of it. I think where Auburn drops back, and the other part is simply, we've been dependent on great players, I think, to some extent when we had great teams, more than systems or other thing. And when the great players were gone, there wasn't always another great player around to stand up and be the next guy.
Yeah, we've
quarterback or something.
We've depended on players as opposed to quality depth a lot of the time.
Yes.
And so when we lose that top, there's not really a middle moving right back up again. Although, you know, honestly, not many programs can do that consistently. That's the thing that always gets me back to the can't let go, which is that and that is that we always compare ourselves to that one other program, and unfortunately it happens to be the one that is utterly dominant currently. And so, you know, we feel like we're either first or last. And if we're not better than Alabama, we're last. That's what I can't let go, and it's ridiculous, you know. So, and that's part of it as well.
That's fair.
But no, I agree. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're moving into our final pit here, so – do you have anything you can't let go this week?
No, I'm sad that Auburn's basketball season didn't end well, the men's basketball season. And I know that things are going to be better. I know there's excellent recruits out there that are coming in the next 2 years. And, you know, Perf is going to be cleared and play next year, that kind of stuff. So I hope for a brighter future for Auburn's men's basketball team, and that one day we can enjoy them being in the men's, you know, NCAA tournament again and enjoy the fun of that.
You know, what's funny about that was months ago, when it looked like we had this great team of basketball and all the talk was about Gus, I was just trolling up trouble by talking down about Pearl. And of course, people were all like, oh, but he's going to be great. And no, oh, you can't, you know, say that. It's, of course, we're bad now, but man, just watch out. And I was just kidding. I knew he'd be fine with Pearl. And sure enough, the last few weeks, I've actually seriously saying what I was just joking about. how people can look at what happened to our basketball team this year and think it's anything coaching wise is beyond me. It's, I mean, half the team was in the traction ward of the hospital by the end of the season, you know? And then the one that wasn't even ever allowed to play. I mean, we were out there with the water boy.
Well, and then Canty departed midseason for the NBA. So,
no kidding.
No, like you watch the team, they play hard. And I think it's obvious that Pearl can recruit talented players. And I think he's going to get there. But again, he started at the bottom, out of like 130 basketball schools in the country. We were in the, 110 range or whatever when he got here. And it's a long way to build up to good.
Yeah, my fear has always been that he would just be like, this is killing my overall career record. I got to get out of here. Somebody offer me a job at a basketball school. Because, I mean, you know, why keep banging your head against this brick wall if you can't ever get it going? And it wouldn't be his fault so much as it just been nobody – you know, since really Sonny Smith, maybe Cliff Ellis a little bit. The only sustained success we've ever had for any period of time, honestly, even Cliff was up and down, was Sonny Smith in the 80s.
Yeah.
That was it, ever. I'm omitting the glorious Tommy Joe Eagles years.
You're hurting me.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, we'll do our basketball show, and we can reminisce about the Tommy Joe Eagles era down the road a little bit. All right. Well, you got anything we learned? Let's see. What have we learned this week? I think we've learned that we're ready for spring practice to get going again.
Yes, I'm excited. Actually, I'm looking forward to having real football to talk about.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's the main thing. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. Don't forget, in addition to Larundo, we got these two fabulous books over my left shoulder here, Decades of Dominance, Season of Our Dreams. And I gave away two of those last week. They're on their way. They're en route to their new owners. When I hit 5,000 followers on Twitter, I was going to give away a book, and I just couldn't decide. I didn't want to give away just one to all the people I drew out of the hat. So Mira drew three names. Two of them picked Decades of Dominance. It's kind of hard to do backwards and behind you. And the other one picked this book right here, The Shattering Omnibus. They get a humongous value there. So I've mailed those books out, and they should be arriving very soon. There'll be more people reading Decades of Dominance and Shattering, so that's cool. All right, John. Well, I think at this point, if I can get the mouse back here, I think all that remains to be said is War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.